This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. When the Arkansas Razorback baseball season begins next year, there will be a new voice bringing the play-by-play to listeners. This summer, Chuck Barrett, who has been handling the baseball radio broadcast for the past 23 seasons, announced he would step aside from the microphone. Chuck will still be the play-by-play voice for the Razorback football and basketball games. Last week, I caught up with Chuck and asked him about his more than two decades of calling baseball games, a relationship he began with the program when he was a young man.
I was within a week of my 29th birthday when I started. And I was working in Fort Smith and was working in radio news. And liked it very much and thought that might be what I would do for a while. And a friend of mine called me and said, the guy that's done Razorback baseball, he's not going to be back next year. And I think if, you know, you would go to work for KFAY, and part of the job would be doing Razorback baseball. This was not, there was no network or anything like that then. I just did it on the side. I think I made $40 a game that first year. And, you know, I did not have a baseball air check. And so I went out in the backyard, and so I'd have a little natural sound and just kind of let a game play out in my mind and, you know, recorded it into one of those old cassette recorders and sent them that tape, and lo and behold, they hired me.
Now, that was in the days of George Coalfield. Lights had been installed, but what was the equipment like you worked with that first season?
Well, compared to what we work with now, it was awful. I mean, back then it wasn't bad. You know, the biggest thing was, you know, there was no heating or no air conditioning or anything like that in the old press box. And, you know, the air conditioning thing wasn't really an issue, but the heat in the winter was. And, you know, you'd play those games the first part of February, and a lot of times on into March, it was cold. And the electricity was, you know, the way the circuits were set up probably wasn't the best in the world, but, you know, we had a little space heater in there, and when the space heater was on, it would interfere with the equipment. And you could hear the buzz through the headsets and all that. It just didn't work, you know, all out of the same outlet, and that was the only outlet we had in there. So in the really cold games, we would, you know, we had a 60-second break, and you'd fire that heater up, and you maybe got a good 15 seconds of heat out of it, and then you'd have to shut that thing off when you came back out of the break. So I can remember doing that a lot in the first part of it, but, you know, we had what we needed to get on the air. There was no ISDN, there was no, you know, and ISDN's almost become obsolete now, but there was... You know, it was a phone line and a piece of equipment that got you on the air, and that's how we did it.
Was that still Southwest Conference?
First year in the SEC.
First year in the SEC.
My first year was 92, and that was the first year in the SEC.
Did you fly to the away games?
Flew to some of them. We would fly to the far away ones. You know, I thought one of the really cool things was, you know, within the first month of doing the games, we played in a tournament up in Seattle at the King Dome. And, you know, that's, you know, that was a really cool trip. We flew to that. We would fly to South Carolina in the old days. If we played in Florida, we'd fly to that. If you played at Kentucky, you'd fly to that. But aside from those, it was, you know, it was on the bus. There were a lot of, you know, there were many, many Sundays on the road in those first probably 5-8 years when, you know, we'd pull in from Baton Rouge literally on Monday morning after a Sunday afternoon game. You'd pull in about 5 or 6 in the morning, and I'd just get off the bus, get in the car, and go to the radio station, go to work. And, but yeah, travel was not nearly what it is now.
23 years of baseball. I think it's been 8 now for football. And
7. Yeah, I think this will be my 8th year for football.
And then about 3 or 4 for basketball.
Yeah, I've done 4 for basketball.
Okay. People would ask me, because I was in radio, so they thought they would knew, they would say, well, how does Chuck do that? Because I would figure out, if a Dave Van Horn team went to Omaha, which is always the goal, right, to get to the College World Series, and by the time you're starting football, you might have, seriously, 3 or 4 weekends a year that were yours?
You know, in 2012, I guess it was, I think it was after my second year doing basketball. Might have been my first, I forget. did go to Omaha, and we played, you'll remember, we were playing South Carolina for the right to get to the championship series when we were eliminated. So, and that year was one of those funny years when, you know, the 4th of July was just fell where I think I got back from Omaha on a Saturday, and 4th of July week was starting. I think 4th of July was maybe the following Sunday that year. So, yeah, I mean, it was a long year, and I can remember after that thinking, wow, this is really a stretch. And, you know, you get back and you, you know, well, I'm ready for summer vacation now. Well, SEC Media Days is in like 2.5 weeks. So that was a long year. Yeah, you want to go to Omaha. And here's the thing. And I think anyone who's been involved in it knows this. When you get to the postseason, you get everybody gets new life. Fans get new life. Teams get new life. Well, broadcasters do too. And that's when it's fun. And you get to the postseason. You're playing the tournaments, and there's just a different atmosphere. And at that point, you run on adrenaline, and you're glad you're there. But it certainly makes for a long year. Yes.
I'm going to make an assumption. It's more fun to be around a team that's winning than one that's not.
Oh, certainly. Absolutely. It's a lot more fun, and you know, I've seen it on both ends of the spectrum. I remember I think in 2000 we'd won the SEC in 1999, and Norm had worked so hard through the 90s to get this team up to snuff, and they went 22-8, which is really that's a heck of a record in the SEC in 99, and won it, and it was about as good as you could hope for. I mean, obviously, it ended in a bad way with that regional in Fayetteville, but it was still a great year. And then the next year, I'll never forget. I mean, they lost everybody; they had nobody coming back, and a lot of the players that they'd signed opted to go pro. And I mean, they really, you know, you knew it was going to be a tough year. Well, they went to Tennessee and won the first two games of the series, and it was like, well, everything's going to be okay. And then they lost 18 SEC games in a row, and that was no fun. And but yeah, it's a lot more fun when you're with a winning team. There's no question. From a broadcast standpoint, it really doesn't matter. You can't control what happens on the field, but it sure is a lot more fun to follow a team that's winning.
It seems like your career with the Razorbacks, you've been around some really influential and special people. I think of the two baseball coaches, because only in 23 years, only two coaches, Norm DeBrine and Dave Van Horn. But then you were also connected with Paul Eales and Mike Nail, some people that were great, I would imagine, on-the-job training to learn from.
Well, that's been the best thing that's ever happened to me, is the opportunity to work with those guys. And I learned from old-school guys. I didn't learn from new-school guys. And I don't mean to sound like a grandfather, but I didn't learn from the ESPN generation. I learned from guys that did it differently. And all those guys were great mentors. You know, Jim Elder in Little Rock, I did a lot of work with him over the years, and he was from that school, and Paul certainly was. And I think Mike Nail is just a great broadcaster. I mean, he's a blood and guts broadcaster and lives it and loves it and did it his whole career. And I've got so much admiration for Mike as a broadcaster. And that's the luckiest thing that's happened to me is you know, fortunately, in at least in a few brief moments, I was smart enough to shut up and just watch them. And they were wonderful people to learn from, and all quality people. And you know, I think you'll have an appreciation for this, Kyle. There's a certain way when you there's a certain way that, you know, Paul talked to people that came up with him. That came up to him, that made an impression on me. Even if he didn't have time, he always stopped and talked, and that made an impression on me. Mike Nail taught me the importance, as a very young guy in the spring and in the summer, that even if it was hot, you'd be treated a lot more professionally if you put on a pair of slacks as opposed to a pair of shorts. And just little things that I watched from these guys and learned from, just the way they handled themselves, the way they walked and talked, and all the little things that I think either make you or break you. I was really lucky in that those guys, they knew what they were doing, and I think we all have people that, you know, we look to sometimes professionally and we think, you know, 20 years from now, I want to be like that guy. And so you just kind of emulate them. It's not, there's not an original thought there. You just copy what they're doing. And that's kind of what I did with those guys.
You grew up in Clarksville, correct?
That's correct.
Did you work in radio when you were in high school?
Yeah, it's really all I've ever done.
That sounds familiar.
I started when I was 16 years old. I worked at the radio station in Clarksville. I also worked at, those who remember Happy Days, I'll draw an analogy to Arnold's and the place that I worked at in high school. It was kind of that kind of place, the gathering place for all the kids. So, hey, I had a great life growing up. And I started working at the radio station when I was 16 and did the PA, did the boys, the little league ball games and stuff. And for whatever reason, I don't know what it is, but for whatever reason, I've always known this is what I would do. It's all I've ever done. It's all I know how to do. If it were to ever go, I'd be in a lot of trouble.
The relationship between a listener and a baseball play-by-play announcer grows and is something special because of the number of games, because of the rhythm of the game. I think of the folks who grew up with Jack Buck and the Cardinals, or Denny Matthews and the Royals, or Vin Scully and the Dodgers. I know you don't like to hear this sort of thing. You shudder from this. You're one of the best. I listen to a lot. You made something sound so easy that if you've ever tried to do it, you realize it's not easy at all. How did you learn to watch everything on a game? Because if people don't realize, the half innings in baseball are very short, and there's not always someone to tell you that there's been a substitution made at shortstop or a balk has been committed. If you look down to score and look up, you may miss something. How did you learn to be able to see everything?
Well, by missing stuff. just to be honest, that's the most honest thing I can say, is you learn by missing stuff. You'll ask yourself in your head, a question that I think an audience member might be asking, and well, I didn't notice that. And I think when you first start out, you just learn to notice those things. Baseball is a game that's made for the radio. There's no doubt about that. It is a game that is made for the radio. And the time between pitches, people always say, well, what do you talk about between pitches? Well, that's when you paint the picture. And baseball is the only sport that affords you that time. Ball games now, when you listen to anybody's broadcast now, everything is sponsored. Everything is sponsored. You give the time on the scoreboard, it's sponsored. And, you got a million and one commercial liner cards to read now. And so the opportunities to really paint the picture are eliminated dramatically by the commercialization of the games. And look, I'm not complaining, because that's what pays me, and it pays for all of it. And I don't begrudge that, because I understand how it works. But baseball is a game that, because of the time that elapses between pitches, affords you the time to paint the picture. And I think over time, you get a feel for the game. You mentioned something earlier that was very beneficial to me as a baseball broadcaster. I only did games for two coaches in 23 years. I knew when Norm was going to run. Mm. Just by having watched all his teams play, I know when Dave likes to start runners. Just by having watched his team play, just by talking to him, just by talking baseball with him. And that's a great, great tool for a broadcaster. And it makes you sound a lot smarter than you really are. If you say, if it's a 1-2 count, and that you've talked to him before the game, and you say, well, the guy likes to go to the breaking ball in the dirt on 1-2, and if we don't chase, we're going to start the runner. Well, you can say, let's see if they start the runner right here. This might be a good time to start the runner. And then when they do, you sound like a genius. But in reality, it's just because you've been around that coach and you understand what his nuances are. And that was a great, great benefit to me doing those ball games, was because, Norm and Dave are very similar in philosophy anyway. And I understood what they wanted to do. And so, because of that, I was able to pick up on some things that I would not have been able to if every 4 or 5 years you're changing coaches.
Well, Chuck, congratulations on 23 years. Get some rest, and then we'll listen to you as the football season kicks off.
All right, Kyle. I appreciate you having me on. Thank you.
Chuck Barrett talked to me last week, just a few days after he announced he would no longer be the play-by-play voice of Arkansas Razorback baseball. He will continue his radio duties as the voice of the University of Arkansas football and basketball teams.
Brady stands in from the left side. Bannock's going to work from the stretch with the bases loaded. The pitch is coming. Swing and a fly ball to left field. Hit pretty well. Going back is Napolitan. That ball's good.